Hello and welcome to LSE Share Talk. My name is Peter Higgins, this is Conker's Corner, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with Nicholas Marks. Now, Nicholas covers the length and breadth of the globe with regards to his niche that he works in. He works in private equity, corporate finance, and he's a principal at NMCO. Good afternoon, Nicholas. How are you today?
Good afternoon, Peter. I'm very well. Thank you very much.
Nicholas, I know you're sitting there in Hong Kong. You've had a long day, so I really want to say I appreciate you taking the time to come on to Conker's Corner this evening.
You and your listener are most welcome.
Thank you, sir. Now, I'm going to start at the top here. I want really for you to give us a background, your background, and how you started, what was the interest, how old you were around that time, etc.
Okay. Well, I'm 48 years old, and initially I'm coming from the hospitality industry. I did my apprenticeship in Germany for 3 years, and then I went to hotel school, and then curiosity came over me because I wanted to know where the money comes from to fund hotel investments and operations. And I went over to investment banking. That would mean that I would have to start my career from zero again, but I was young, I didn't care.
Yeah.
So I started in investment banking at Merrill Lynch.
Yeah.
And I started with commodities trading and stocks and retail brokerage. And I moved over to Credit Suisse First Boston to corporate finance and mergers and acquisitions. And I joined a team of real estate and especially hospitality there. And this is actually what I wanted to do.
Okay, so you navigated all the way from hospitality and then back to hospitality and retail real estate again.
Again, yes.
fantastic. Now, how many years did that take you to go from doing your degree in hotel school and so on and so forth to being Credit Suisse?
That took, let's see, 3, 1, 4, et cetera, et cetera. This was about six or seven years.
Six or seven years of academia and hard work, and you got Credit Suisse.
Exactly.
Fantastic.
Exactly.
Well done. So when you're there at Credit Suisse and you're now in the M&A part of real estate, what happened then?
Well, in Credit Suisse First Boston, I had a luck to work with a top team of private equity and mergers and acquisition specialists under the roof of one of the top real estate guys back then in the bank.
Yeah,
and it gave me a huge insight on how the operations work on the background of the hotel, where the money comes from, etc.
Yes.
So you know, Credit Suisse First Boston was dismantled.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, well, hey, why not? I'll do my own shop.
Yeah.
And this was 1997. And I did my own shop, took my contacts and all the network that I built up and clients, and started from there. I was very young. I was 30 years old.
Yeah.
That was back in the day, very young. Now, you know, you have entrepreneurs at 18 and they have billions of dollars.
Yes, of course.
but they are broke next day because this $1 billion that they have is in shares, not in cash.
Yes, very true.
So since 1997, since I'm 30 years old, I am on my own.
Wow, fantastic!
With the ups and downs that come with the story, with the sweat and the blood, the beers.
Yes.
And here I am. I survived many crises, especially 2008.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
And here I am. At this moment, we have a boutique investment bank, and I'll call it the firm. I call it an intersection between the investment banking and the private equity. So we specialize in the niche of the entertainment and hotel industry, especially in the real estate sector, in turnarounds, restructurings, and structurings, but from a private equity point of view. So we give ourselves time frames, the 7 to 10 years, or let's say the 5 or the 7 years. So our job is to clean at our targets the inefficiencies that are there
Of course, yeah.
Much, much, much faster as any strategic buyer.
Yeah.
And at the same time, we are running a fund. Nothing compared to the big private equity guys in the United States.
Yeah.
But me and my partners are right now. We are happy. You know, I do not aspire to have billions of dollars. So yes. I'm happy with what I'm doing, and at the same time, I'm traveling the world.
No, that's fantastic. I can hear in your voice though you have a passion for a good deal. I can definitely hear that, Nicholas.
Oh yeah, I do. I do have that. And the most beautiful thing in this business is, and it doesn't matter if you are a stock picker or day trader, it is you never know what the next day is going to bring you.
That's very true. That's very true. No day is the same. The market, as I say, every day is a school day for me in the markets.
That's true.
Now, we've touched on it, but obviously, you and I are both on Twitter. We share a fair bit of information. Not a lot of people know much about private equity. Now, if I could be so bold as to ask you, Nicholas, just very condensedly explain private equity in layman's terms to the investor or listener out there that has never touched on private equity, please.
Yeah, well, this is a good question. this reminds me of my times at New York Stern Business School. You know, explain this, and it's difficult to explain. If you want to go a little bit into history, private equity is there since 500 years.
Yes,
it's buying companies, and with the same management or without another management. Trying to make a company more efficient. Now, yes. Nowadays, what is it nowadays? Nowadays, we have the so-called financial sponsors.
Yes.
That they are holding money for little savers like pension funds members, etc. Yeah. And they are doing the same. But as I've mentioned before, they have time frames.
Yes.
7 years, 10 years, and in order to make a lot of money, or I would better say a considerable return, they use leverage.
Yes.
Sometimes badly, sometimes very wisely.
Yeah.
And this is nothing else to take an outsider from the company, from any company,
yeah,
and let him into the company to clean the efficiencies, because in 99% of the cases, an outsider knows how to handle a private company better than an insider. An insider is too much in love or concerned, and he has not the ability to see the problems that are coming after him.
Yeah, it's too much emotional attachment to the
yes,
company he's in. Almost, yeah. So you need somebody who comes out and not necessarily enough clinical, but as can see the wood for the trees rather than getting emotionally involved. Yeah,
exactly.
I get that. Now, I wanted to ask you. I've got some questions here which I've wanted to go through, but I want to touch obviously more so on private equity for our listeners. I wanted to know. When you were doing your studies, did you then start to get an interest? Did you start to then do a bit of dealing in shares or stocks at any time earlier on in your investing life?
Well, what public stocks are concerned, et cetera, et cetera, I didn't have much interest on that. I was more keen on the private side of the company. I want to see the company as a whole.
Yeah,
and even nowadays, Benjamin Graham always said it. No? Don't look at the company on a per share basis. Look at the company in a complete way, and then divide it.
Yes,
into the shares outstanding, and you will see if you have a great valuation or not.
Yes.
So now, I was confronted with my first 100 shares of Marriott, and this was back in the day when the company was called Host Marriott. They didn't spin off yet.
Yeah.
By a gift of my father. He gave me 100 shares. Yes, he gave me 100 shares of that.
Oh,
and
wow.
I still have that in my portfolio. It's not 100 shares. Yeah. I sold a few.
Yeah.
But But I kept them, and I went through all the splittings and all the spin-offs, etc., etc.
Fantastic.
And during the years, okay, I had to do my savings because I'm a little bit of a contrarian. I'm a big contrarian.
Yeah.
And I do not trust a trust, a pension fund, etc., etc. And I do not trust in the state to take care of me when I'm old.
Yeah, we're in the same boat there, mate. I completely agree. Yeah.
So I'm doing that myself, and the strategy that I have is something that I mentioned to you earlier. I just set it and forget it. And I have a little portfolio with dividend stocks, long-term view. And I can tell you the industries that I go in. I have a lot of United States REITs, Real Estate Investment Trust.
Yeah.
I do have a geographical disbursement, let's say so. I'm concentrating in countries where the companies, due to the tax regulations, are more keen to pay out dividends than in other countries.
Okay.
That means that I have stocks in Australia, because Australia is very favorable in paying dividends. Yeah. I have stocks in Japan.
Yeah.
And of course, in the United States.
Okay, so that's a good mix. So I'm gonna have to ask you a question on Australia. There, do you get an additional bonus buying in Australia regarding the currencies that you're using to purchase in Australia, given the weakness of the Australian dollar?
Well, yes, of course you have a bonus there, but this is not my strategy. My portfolio in Australia, I think it's for like 6 years old.
Yeah.
So I didn't look much after to the currency fluctuations, but Australia gives me a sense of it is a very mature market.
Yeah.
Very dividend friendly. Australia never has been in a recession in the last 28 years.
Yep, that's true.
That is outstanding.
Yeah.
And the stocks that I'm in, they are not very volatile, but they pay their dividends out every year.
Yeah.
I reinvest them. So I'll take care of I'll make myself the compounding.
Yeah, compounding is very good.
Yes. And that's about it. In Japan, the same thing.
Okay, that's very, very shrewd there. Very long-term planning there. Like you say, you have to plan for your pension and when you don't want to work anymore, because the government may not look after us, whether you're in Germany, England, Australia, or whatever. So yeah,
it doesn't matter if 2008 has showed us something.
Yeah,
it is. You cannot trust anything anymore. No big institutions, no nothing. Not even the state. I would not. I rather would not be a Greek or a Spanish pensioner right now.
Yes,
and not in 20 years, of course.
Very serious state of problems there. Yeah, very true. And I would possibly throw Austria in there, or the Italians nearly as well. That's looking perilous, I think.
Yeah. Yeah,
right.
But I notice to the listeners, you have to be cautious here. Me and you, we are able, because of our jobs and maybe the money that we earn, to do that.
Yes, yeah.
To plan. To other listeners that have little portfolios, hey, take care of your pension in the States, et cetera.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you have to fill that pension gap. You will always have it. People think from now on, in 20 years, everything will be all right. No, you always will have a gap.
Yeah,
because people tend to forget that they will not work.
Very
and
true.
If you don't work, you spend more money.
Of course. Yeah.
But I do have a saying for all pensioners out there, or everybody who relies on the social security system. And it is very cynical. I'm very sorry.
No, go for it.
The thing is, what kind of a super investment is that? You give the state $100 and he pays you back 20 cents.
Mm. Yeah. It's not great, is it?
No.
Yeah. And the problem we've got now is that depending on how long you live, you may not get the 20 cents even then.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're pushing out the age of retirement, you know, gone from 60, 65 in the UK. It's going to be 70, 75 by the time we get another few years ahead of ourselves. So scary. No, those are very salient points, Nicholas. Thank you very much for sharing those. Now, no, I think you've already answered the question I was going to go to after that segue, whether or not you're how would you describe yourself as an investor? Low risk, cautious. You're obviously long term. And your strategy is diversifying globally.
Yeah. No. Well, I wouldn't say that I'm low risk. I have positions in gambling companies.
Right. Okay.
And they are by no means low risk.
No. They're
but not. But on the long term, and since I'm going to the long term,
yeah,
I don't care much. If I see, and believe me, it is true, I look at my portfolio maybe every 3 months.
That's good. Yeah.
If I see that one or two or three have got beaten down, I look why.
Yeah.
And then maybe I make an average down. But okay. I will never make an average down if the share price has fallen more than 10 to 15%. I wouldn't do that. Then I will leave it. I will let it go and wait for better times.
Okay, that's sensible.
One of the strategies that I follow is if a company in my portfolio or some company that I see in the news has got a beating, but it's a fundamental beating. It has nothing to do with the intrinsic operations of the company. Let's say some war or some manager that has been kicked out because he was not very genuine, etc., etc.
Yeah.
Stock prices tend to fall down because this is the reaction of the herd.
Yes.
And then I buy. Then I buy because I know it will clear up itself. It will be back on the right track again, and I'm good for 3, 4, 5%.
Yeah, that's very true. It's about looking beyond the noise, isn't it? And the herd tends to react violently to anything that's negative. So yeah, that's a very good strategy.
Yeah, but the herd is very big, you know.
You've got to be careful. I think you've seen my tweet that I put out every now and then, where running to the door and it's only the first person that gets through. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, I'm sometimes I go with the herd, you know, but I have a life saving vest on.
Yes. No, you have to plan very, very long term. So you've got to be strategic in the sense of what you're doing. Now, obviously, you've got the industry background, Nicholas. Yeah, you've done your investing bank. You covered M&A. You covered real estate. So, for all intents and purposes, you're in a very advantageous position regarding knowledge and how to filter through all the noise and filter through to choose the best investments potentially for your portfolio. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you have an essential criteria that you could share with some of our investors to say, oh, so they would have some nuggets that they could use to filter through and potentially get the best and make the best of their monies?
Well, going to the first part of your questions, it doesn't matter how well educated you are in the industry jargon or the industry.
Okay.
Because right now things are getting so fast that the news of today is not even from today anymore. And the only thing that I can really give a point to the listeners is never let your guard down. Second level think everything what you see and what you hear. Because it's a lot of things that you're gonna see, a lot of things that you're gonna hear, and 95% of that it is BS. And I'm very sorry about to say that.
No, that's okay.
And you have to do your own math and go old school. Make your discounted cash flow valuations. Take care of your fundamentals. read the balance sheets through, filter all the news, and second level, think everything.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very good point you've made there, Nicholas, in the sense of question everything and be curious and constantly do as much research as you possibly can, because we've already touched on it, there's so much noise out there. There's the bullish noise and the negative noise, and you've got to do your exploration and find your own destiny with the stock, haven't you?
Exactly, and then you are in a very good advantage, because if things go well, you can tap yourself on the shoulder, and if things go bad, you can say to yourself, "Well, it's my fault,
yes,
because I didn't do it well." But yeah, you cannot see that your stock is tanking 25-30%, and start shouting, "Well, the media is to blame." No, it's you to blame.
Yeah.
I have a suggestion, and this is no marketing and nothing.
Yeah.
For all the listeners, that they should read the memos of Oak Tree Capital of the chairman, Howard Marks.
Oh, yes. I've read several of his notes, and he is an absolute phenomenon, isn't he, really?
Well, if you read this, you don't need anything more.
No, that's a very, very good point. I will add a link. Sorry to talk over you, Nicholas. I will add a link to this particular publication that we do to mm-hmm. that regarding your recommendation.
Okay.
Excellent. Now, I was going to ask, what has been the greatest lesson that you've attained since you started in your journey in investing? Best lesson you've had? Obviously, you experienced a couple of crashes, 2008 being the main one. Any big lessons?
The greatest lessons is, well, never stop learning. You know, every day is a new day. Every day you have to learn something new. The greatest lesson in investing is never take for granted that you know everything.
Brilliant, love that. Yeah. No, that's
so. I don't know from what background the listeners are, but I guess this will be a mixmack of everything.
Yes.
Keep reading, keep making your own notes, making your own valuations, and just go for it, you know. This is the biggest lesson. Right. There's nothing specific what you could say. Okay, no, I would say I am more than a technical trader than a fundamental trader. That is again BS, you know. You have to find a balance between the two.
Yeah,
it is not easy.
No, it's not. And I mentor and coach several people, Nicholas, via Twitter DM messages and my email account. And what I say to them, they say, "What criteria do you use to pick things?" And I say, "Look, it depends on the sector, depends on the stock, yeah, it depends on the time of year." So there's lots of different filters you can use at different times, you know, for picking a particular stock. And then when you pick a stock, and I say, "Right, I'm on Twitter. Here I go. I picked this stock. I bought this stock." Then I find myself having to explain to half a dozen people why I picked that stock and bought that stock on this day. It's because I've done my searches and I've done my criteria and I've met my criteria, and that is all.
Yeah.
Doesn't fit everybody. Yeah,
but I said it's not easy. If not, everybody will do it, and there is no college or no university in the world that will teach you investing.
Yeah.
Because this college will be, with their annual dues, more expensive than Howard, Wharton, and Stanford all combined.
Exactly. The panacea of all. Yes, yes.
And you said the word before starting our conversation. You have to have passion.
Yes.
And passion comes in this job very difficult, because what is passionate to read through a balance sheet and a cash flow statements? That's not passionate. Jeez, I could be in the pub. But you know that the opportunity cost is immense. It's, you know, immense. The procrastination issues in front of that. You can go to the pub. You can hook up with girls. You can go to a soccer match. You can go to a rugby match. That million things that you can do that are more exciting.
Yes,
than sitting at night at your desk. reading balance sheets through.
Yeah,
so you have to be really passionate about it.
Absolutely spot on there, Nicholas. Yes, you're making me think about going to the pub now because the sun is out. I'm thinking about it now. But we will press on and continue. Now, what has been your wisest investment decision to date, Nicholas?
My wisest the investment decision to date is... do you mean overall, or you mean a stock?
It could be personal. I'm thinking maybe setting up NMCO. It could be individual, as in a stock. It's your call.
Well, I will go a little bit personal because this is the most wisest investment decision that I made when I was 27.
Yeah,
my father passed away.
And
he left me and my two siblings an inheritance. The inheritance were three hotels on the Balearic Islands, loaded with debt.
Right. Okay.
So it was not funny.
Nope. No.
And I spoke with my siblings. We had no money. We had nothing. Okay. We had an inheritance tax in front of us and forfeiture, etc., etc., etc. And I thought to myself, okay. Look, there's somehow some reason in destiny that I made the hotel business and the hotel schools and you guys not. There's some reason that I know how to speak Spanish, English, German, and Italian, and you not.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you something. We liquidate today and we have nothing, or you guys give me 10 years.
Okay.
And they say, okay, we'll give you 10 years. And in 10 years, I managed the three hotels to be 35, sold the participation, and gave my brothers X amount. This was my wisest investment decision that I ever made.
Commendable. Absolutely fantastic. Because obviously then it's a family thing. It's like almost – it's not. Some people say you get family heirlooms or whatever, but it's more significant than that. This is your dad's legacy that you're trying to keep hold of and make better, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It is a mistake because if you invest, you have to put the emotions out of the way.
Of course, which is what you touched on before. But when
it was important for me, and when my siblings saw the passion that I had in and trying to build this up, I have to admit, I didn't do it alone. I had the Spanish partners from my father, et cetera. But the complete strategy that we made, that was based 90% on my strategy.
Fantastic.
But again, this was an emotional thing. It could have been gone wrong.
Of course,
and I would be sitting on a pile of debt.
Yeah.
But at that time, it doesn't matter. I was 27.
Yeah.
Nowadays, that means nothing because I know guys from 27. They are sitting at private equity shops in the United States, are making $1 million every year plus bonuses.
Yeah.
And that's the new normal.
Yeah.
But back in 1994, that was another time.
No, that's very true.
Sometimes when I speak about it, I think that I'm a grandpa or something like that. I'm only 48 years old, you know.
Yeah, only 48.
I have a long way to go.
No, you're still a very young man, and you've got plenty more years of investing activity to do. Can I just ask, Nicholas, regarding those hotels you mentioned, am I right to assume that you still have either all of them or some of them still in your portfolio?
No, I sold them all.
You sold them all. Okay. All right then. Yeah. So you did you kept to your goals with your brother and your family. You did what you needed to do, and then you liquidated after 10 years and returned the funds to them. That's fantastic. Now, I wanted to go back just a bit back to private equity. I've got in front of me a report that's been done by Roland Berger. Yeah?
Yeah.
It's titled European Private Equity Outlook 2016. Now, for all intents and purposes, given all the noise we've had and the really poor equity market beginning of the year, private equity has been pretty resilient. And now from this report, it's essentially saying that there's more good news ahead for the private equity. Is that linked to cheap money, or is it just the demand of the assets that corporates have got on their balance sheet?
No, it's only linked for the cheap money. because, well, number one, I'm not really a friend of Roland Berger. Roland Berger is a big consultancy in Germany.
Yeah.
It's very big, very powerful. It's kind of a McKinsey. These guys are pros in doing PowerPoint presentations. Believe me that. But no, the fact is that there's a lot of money sitting around looking for deals.
Yeah.
Okay. And the other side, the counterpart, knows that a lot of money is there looking for deals, and the valuations are getting very, very, very high.
Right. Okay.
But if you are a wise financial sponsor, well, you don't take any a deal like just for the sake to spend your money. You know, you have a fiduciary duty against all the private equity investors, in this case, the limited partners.
Yeah,
it's all about the money. I can give you a very good example from the UK.
Yeah.
Guy Hans from Terra Firma.
Yes.
He has trouble with Four Seasons retirement homes because back in the day, he was under pressure to invest a certain amount of money. He had exactly 90 days from he had a gun on his head from the limited partners. Okay, you have to invest this money.
Yeah.
Or we're gonna ask you that you give us the money back.
Yeah.
So what he did, he bought a graveyard called Four Seasons. And Four Seasons is hemorrhaging cash like there's no tomorrow. And we're gonna see what is going to happen. I don't know how keen the UK government is there to make a bailout on a bunch of retirement homes. And what's gonna happen with all the money from the families that have invested in these retirement homes, you know? And what's gonna happen to all these senior people that are sitting in the retirement homes? It's kind of tricky. And this is going back again. Because there's too much money.
Too much money. Yeah. We've got smaller sort of like infrastructure funds in the UK, and we've got obviously the builders and some of the construction companies that have infrastructure arms and private equity arms. But it's it appears to be almost subscale within the UK, the private equity segment. And we only ever hear about them when there's the smaller sort of half a billion to 1.5 billion sort of deals. Why do you think that the private equity market per se in the UK is pro rata smaller than the rest of the world, if not Germany and the US?
I couldn't give you a very good answer to that, or not a really knowledgeable answer for that, because I do not follow something. A lot of to do has to do with the media. Don't get yourself confused, you know.
Yeah.
For the media is not really interested if some little private equity firm is investing £2 million or £5 million in a little pub chain or in a manufacturing company. This is not news.
Not news.
It should be news. It should be news because, of course, private equity has the two sides. Sometimes it's very bad. What is happening there? You know, jobs are getting lost, etc. But on the other side, a lot of family held and privately held little businesses can get a real boost with a private equity investment.
Yeah.
And not all my colleagues, I would say my colleagues or my associate out there, are greedy vultures.
Yes, very true. They're all asset strippers.
There are quite a few. I will not deny it. Of course, they are.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. There are people who don't kill people, and there are people that kill people. You know? it's the way of life. But no, really into terms, what in the UK it's happening with private equity, I think. You only hear the big noise when some American company comes and it is good for the media.
Yeah.
I don't think that the media covers in the United Kingdom very well the big efforts that private equity is doing in the UK.
Yeah, because we always hear about the KKRs jumping in and companies like that, don't we?
That is really boring. If you follow a little bit my Twitter feed, I tweet some of the big ones, but I tweet a lot from the smaller things that are happening in the United States. In the United States, for example, even the most little thing, $500,000 or a $1 million investment, is getting a little bit of a media attention.
Yeah.
Because it is important. It is important.
No, that's absolutely. I think that's absolutely spot on. I mean, I'm going back to Peter Lynch now, the US investor, and he always says, "Invest in what you know." You started from hospitality. You've gone into to US real estate, and you've stuck to your knitting essentially, Nicholas. And you've done fantastically well, and you've looked after your family regarding the education that you've learned, and you've applied that to make good your promise to your family. So I think that's absolutely commendable, mate. Well done. Well done to you.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. But I will never do that promise again, I'll tell you that. But I was 27 and probably when I did that, I was drunk in a bar.
Lots of deals are done in bars, Nicholas. You know that.
Yes, exactly. The best deals are sometimes done in bars and restaurants.
Okay, sir. So you've been in this business for a good while now. If there's one thing you could change regarding the investing landscape, what would that be? Personal or professional?
Oh, I have to pass on that. I couldn't answer. I don't know. I don't know what to change. I think this question needs another podcast. and a little bit in depth of research. I couldn't say right now, you know.
No, that's okay. Because that's
what I say to you today, I say tomorrow is yeah. it's not even worthwhile anymore. Everything goes so fast. No, I couldn't say. I have to pass on that. I'm sorry.
No problem at all. I like your honesty and your humility there. Thank you very much. Now, if you were starting out investing today, right? So let me run this by you then. You're starting out today in investing, right?
Yeah.
Things you couldn't have done back in the 90s, and mm-hmm. and you are able to look back now and you think, if I could do now what I could have done then, what would it be? So what would you do differently?
Other than not
making that promise regarding the hotel, you've answered that.
Yeah. Well, maybe I should. I would have taken a little bit more risk in a few investments. I'm a contrarian. I like the risk, but sometimes I catch to myself that I didn't have too much information or too much knowledge to press the buy button, as you pointed out in your email. So yes, I will take a little bit more risk. Yes.
Okay. Now, given the obviously there's as we touched on earlier in your particular sector, private equity sector, there's a lot of money sitting on the sidelines, and people are cautious regarding certain uncertainties. Mm-hmm. Without putting words in your mouth, what do you think some of those uncertainties are, and are they actually relevant regarding the slowing down of M&A and private equity activity?
Well, major uncertainties is I don't know if it's an uncertainty, is a hype, but as you see, the hurt takes everything what is a hype. An uncertainty is China. Nobody knows exactly what is coming out there, if it's true or the political situation in many countries, especially in Europe, we have an uncertainty. How is going to be the impact of all the immigrants that we're getting?
Yeah.
We have an uncertainty that knocks exactly on your neck of the woods. Will be there Brexit?
Brexit
will be not.
Mm-hmm.
You're feeling it already.
Yes.
Major private equity companies are making no deals in the United Kingdom.
Yeah, exactly.
And Well, I do not want to go more far with and concerning about terrorism, etc., etc. These are short term thing. As bad as it sounds, nobody cares. As from investment point of view, if 100 people get blown up in Frankfurt or in Paris or in Belgium.
Sounds cynical
again, but it is like that.
Yeah, so it's a harsh reality of the modern financial age, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's finish on a good note here, Nicholas. Now, you and I have been sharing tweets. Yeah, I've been following you for over 2 years now. We have a likeness for mindfulness. Now, I've got this thing whereby I say to people, leave your ego at the door. When you go into the markets, if you go in there with an ego, you'll come out without any money. Now,
if you go with an ego into the market, you get stripped like a chicken.
Exactly. So you've worked all around the globe. You've worked in the investment industry. What is going to have to happen for the culture in certain arenas in the financial sector, in the investment sector, in the private equity sector? What is going to have to happen to change some of that culture so we don't get some of the litigation stuff that's been going on for the last 15, 20 years? How are we going to change that?
Well, then you have to start to change the whole world, you know, because everybody got egos, etc. And look, I have been working for Merrill Lynch and Credit Suisse, First Boston, and even nowadays when I go to the States or to Frankfurt or even in Hong Kong, you just cannot change it. If a 27-year-old guy or a 26-year-old guy, you know, has a few millions because he was part of a deal, he will buy the Ferrari and the big house and have the girls.
Yeah.
And he will think himself that he's the king of the world.
That
he's invincible. But my friend, your enemy is behind. It's called the market, and he will chop your head off. As fast as you can count to three. But you cannot change that, you know.
Okay.
It's an education that comes from your parenthood.
Yes.
You know. It's from your school where you're going, etc. You have humility, you have, everybody got ego, but a little bit more in experience. The best thing is to have is a friend, a good friend that tells you, hey, hold down your horses, you're getting a little bit ridiculous here with your ego. I don't know how we could change that, you know.
Okay. Now we'll move on from that. But I'm hoping that some people will listen to what you've got to say about humility and actually take stock. Now, obviously, you've started, and you said when your father unfortunately passed when you were 27, you had no monies. So you've used your knowledge and the small funds and availability of cash and knowledge to turn what you had. And you've grown to the situation now where you've got your own boutique, as you described it. Now, how and why, Nicholas, should somebody ever consider running their own boutique, given the levels of stresses and demands? You're going all around the world. Could you give a positive spin about going completely free and being able to make your own decision rather than working for company X or company Y? The benefits of freedom.
Yeah, because it's yours. It's yours. It's the same thing that your granddad or something open up a bakery, for example. It is your look. I have been working at Merrill Lynch and Credit Suisse Boston, and one of my reasons I could have stayed there.
Yeah,
you know? I could have stayed there, cash in bonuses. And and don't give a damn, you know. I was seeing what was happening there, you know. It was not my kind. It was not my kind. I said, I can't do better than that. It has been always one of my problems to be in this contrarian, you know. It can be done better.
Yeah.
So, and I didn't want to say to sit in my living room and always say and listen to myself, it can be done better. I had to do it.
Yes. Yeah. Stop and, just talking about it and do it. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
And, yeah. And that's it, you know. And of course, it is not made for everybody no. to go alone. You know? Your family situations can hinder that. A lot of things can hinder that. But if you have the little chance and you see, hey, and it doesn't matter if it's investment banking or it's a bakery shop or it's a garage. Mm. If you have the possibility to say, I want to do it alone, and you have the possibility to do it, just do it.
Excellent.
Just do it. Because there's nothing more satisfying than going on holidays when others are working.
Fantastic. The freedom. Yes, financial freedom. No, it's absolutely fantastic. Now, Nicholas, I've got one more question for you, then I'm going to let you have the rest of your evening to yourself.
Yes.
Now, as you know, with my tweets and everything, I love my quotes, I love my books. Do you have any investing heroes? Do you have any books that you highly recommend for anybody?
Yes, Howard Marks.
Howard Marks, the one you mentioned. Other than that one?
No one else.
No one else. Okay. Now, but Nicholas,
I recommend everybody who starts investing takes the Benjamin Graham book and The Intelligent Investor and reads that through. But for people that are living right now and showing really how investing is more than analyzing your charts or your fundamentals, it's about psychology. It is about to think about, hey, how are going the masses to react? This super forecasting, Howard Marks.
Yeah.
And for the other and for something else, I would recommend the book Super Forecasting from Peter Tetlock from the Wharton University.
Yeah.
And check his webpage at goodjudgmentproject.com. And there they can start to learn to super forecast.
Okay, that's brilliant advice. Nicholas, it's been an absolute pleasure, young man, speaking with you this evening. Well, it's evening in Hong Kong. I might have to bring you back to have a longer conversation and all things that we need to change on the landscape. But until then, sir, I thank you ever so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I look forward to speaking to you again on Twitter and also on Conquest Corner at a later date.
Great. Thanks to you. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak myself out here. And you have the permission to edit everything that is recorded in the conversation.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure. I will not be touching it. I'll be leaving it as it is. I might add some music. We'll see how we get on with that. A little bit of intro music.
Okay.
All right. But Nicholas, thank you ever so much for being on LSE Share Talks, Conquest Call.
Thanks,
it's been
Peter.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Okay. Thank you, Peter. Bye.
Bye-bye, sir.
Bye-bye.